97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, welcome back. Hour number two. We got a lot to cover here this afternoon. Curtis Hauck from Newsbusters is going to come up here. Some of the, the media coverage of certainly the convention down in Dallas has been somewhat questionable, as you might expect. We'll get to that. We have a new season of 60 Minutes that starts this Sunday. You know, first one after the big blow-up over there, and Barry Weiss running the show, so that'll be interesting to see if there's any different tone on the 60 Minutes stories. Andrew Bailey, the assistant FBI director, is in New York City for tomorrow's 9/11 ceremonies. He's going to join us at 5:04. My friend John Ziegler, who is all over the Jerry Sandusky story, he has done a podcast on that over the last decade, and he is literally like the foremost authority on all of this, and it's in the news this week again. So we'll visit with John. I'll have audio cut of the day as well. Don't forget, tomorrow we have a Reardon Roundtable at 3. Former state senators John Lamping and Jeff Smith will be here. Paul Hall on entertainment. Cusimano to take us into the weekend. Unfortunately, the Cardinals are stumbling into the latter part of the season. However, tomorrow is a huge night. Actually, the whole weekend is huge because we have the commemoration of the 2006 World Series Championship team on Friday night, on Saturday. Fred, I can't remember. Are you going on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm going Saturday.
That's the Hall of Fame game with right. Albert and with Yachty. And then my daughter, super pumped about Squishy Day at Busch Stadium on Sunday. She cannot wait for that. All right. Congratulations to our friend Alex Rich, who often visits with us on Wednesday afternoon. He wasn't here yesterday because he was already at the hospital with Annie, his wife. And I checked with him, in with him just before the show. And he said, we've got a baby, Poppy Louise Rich.
That is the cutest name.
Born last night at 8:59, 7 pounds, 8 ounces. And you might remember, Alex played this audio. We were hanging out at the BMW Championship. This didn't happen when we were hanging out. But the day before that, he's watching Rory McIlroy. Rory tees off. You know, people are yelling stuff to these golfers all the time. You don't know if they hear things. And Alex yells out, hey, I'm having a baby next week, or my wife's having a baby next week. We're naming her Poppy. And that caught his attention because he has a Poppy, and he looked over and gave him a big thumbs up. So I just thought that was an interesting moment from the perspective
yes.
is you probably, they hear a lot more than you think
yes,
they hear,
they
right?
Do.
I'm
and
impressed
that, one stood
that Alex
out.
Knew that.
Well, no, everybody, even I know that.
What,
just
you mean
oh,
about,
okay.
about Rory,
coverage.
You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, the that, Poppy.
Yeah. Because it's adorable.
Well, it's a unique name.
And sometimes after Fred, they bring out the kids, and he'd been winning enough lately that we'd
oh, yeah.
see Poppy
he,
running
if you
around.
Follow golf, you know from the past few years
plus,
who his daughter was.
Louise is my middle name.
Is it?
It was my mother's name. I love it when old names come back.
I love it. Yeah, it's a good name. It'll
it's a
Poppy
great
Rich.
Name.
It's got a nice
Poppy
little
Poppy Rich. That's awesome.
Ring to it. Okay, on the I've been waiting to tell this story to Sue. I can't wait to get yelled at, but I'm just going to share it anyway. Fred
what?
Knows this story.
Yeah.
So last, remember before you left, my, I can't call her my daughter-in-law because they're not married, but my son lives in Houston, Evan.
Yes.
His girlfriend, Natalie, is the mother of my grandson, Idris, who just turned
two
years old on the 5th, on Saturday.
He
right?
looks like he's 5.
He does, because
yes.
he's ginormous. He's like in the 99th percentile
and
of height.
His parents aren't that big.
No, my ex-wife's dad and her brothers were tall, but
okay.
it doesn't come from me for sure. So anyway, you know, it's like this has come a long way, Fred, since we were parents when we were younger. I don't ever remember being obligated. Maybe it happened and I just blew it off because I don't do things that most people do. But there seems to be this federal law that if your parents, when your kids have birthdays, you have to have like an official photo session with them, right?
Oh, is that right?
You can't just take pictures normally and say, hey, happy birthday. You have to have the whole photo session. Everybody does this. I mean, I'm not
hilarious.
Even joking. You know that this happens,
oh, yeah.
right? Okay. So they go and they get their photo session, Natalie and Evan and Idris, and they do it before the birthday, of course, right?
Yeah.
So they sent the pictures out last week, and I didn't post anything because I was waiting for the birthday on Saturday. I thought I had showed them to you, okay?
Huh.
All right. Well, I'll show them to you here in a second.
Okay.
So I send them to my mom and dad. My son is actually, and Natalie, they're just terrible about sending pictures of Idris.
Mm.
And I'll give you an example. And by the way, they know we feel this way. I'm not speaking out of turn.
Right.
So they'll tell me, like this happened last week. I'm at the zoo. Okay, send some pictures. So he sends a picture of the back of Idris's head and the orangutan. Like, I don't want to see the orangutan. I want to see my grandson, right? They don't quite get that. So
that's hilarious.
My mom and dad are always complaining about they don't get enough pictures from Houston. I'm like, look, I don't get enough pictures from Houston. So those pictures come in. I'm like, I'm going to send these to my mom and dad. So I send them to my mom and dad, and my dad replies, and this was, hang on, because I got to come
nice
up
orangutan.
With a specific. What we sent them were the official photographs. So you can see, these are kind of
cute. Okay, now how cute
they're
are
they're in
these?
Western gear, and then there's one. That's the one. Look at that one right there. Wait.
Super cute.
Okay, really cute. That has Natalie holding Idris's hand and Evan, right? Okay. So my dad, we're going to come back to that picture here in a second. Let's see, should I show the audience that picture here too?
Yeah.
I can probably do that on the camera, can't I?
Do it.
So this is the one right here that we're
going to
discuss.
Side note, what you really need to do is talk to Natalie and she'll get you more photos.
No, it doesn't work.
No?
No, because she's very busy.
Usually it's the,
She's extremely busy because she manages a restaurant. She's the chef.
She's got stuff to do, so we're left with your son.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I send these to my mom and dad. And sometimes on my mom, I get very confused by this. Maybe I should just let my parents know. Well, my mom has mom's cell. I have her programmed in. Then I have my dad's number, dad's cell, right?
Yeah.
My dad likes to respond on my mom's account. I don't know why. But he always says, love dad. And then he puts the little emoji with the sunglasses. So I know it's not my mom. I can usually tell anyway, but then he says who it is. So I send the pictures, okay? The response I get from my father on my mother's text account says, thumbs up, love dad. Oh, and it looks like that Idris may be having a sister or a brother.
Oh, so, thank God he only said this to you, yes?
Well, yeah, we'll get to that part in a second.
Oh, Lord.
So this is on Friday night. This is the night before
Idris's birthday. Let me see that picture.
Idris's
I got to re-examine.
No, you're not yet. Ah! Not yet. Okay, right. Just give it a second here. So Friday night, I get that. Becky's not home yet. I can't remember where she was. And I'm just sitting there, I think I was watching baseball or something, and I'm kind of looking at that, and I'm like, why is he saying that? So then I look at the pictures. Now, this picture here that has all of them in it, if you look at it.
Oh, yeah, I see it now that you say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You see, now Natalie's very tiny. She's super skinny. The dress that she's wearing, what does it look like to you?
It looks like she's pregnant.
It looks like a little baby bump, right? So I'm like, this may have been Thursday of last week. I think it was.
Oh, man.
2 days before the birthday. So, like, I want to find out.
Well,
but how do you find out? What do you do, Sue? How do you find the answer to that question? Now, it's confusing to me because when Idris, when she was pregnant, they took a long time to tell us.
Yes,
because
they
thought we were going to be mad and they weren't married and all that stuff. Now, this time, when I told Fred, I'm like, well, why would they keep that from us, right?
Right.
So, I had to talk with my son on Friday, last Friday, about something.
This is clear what you do.
What
you throw you throw your father under the bus.
Thank you, Sue.
And you say.
And that's exactly what I did.
Yes.
You know what? I'm so glad you recognize that because some people have thrown the red flag on this. And I said, oh, no. What I said was, hey, my dad, Dennis Reardon, got those pictures. And I read the exact quote. And Evan laughed and goes, no, Natalie's not pregnant. And then Natalie
heard it?
Was in the room.
Oh. Why would he do that?
Thank you. Well, it's my fault.
This is your fault.
That's on me.
because you raised him.
I should have said, okay, here what I did say is I said, I have an awkward question.
Oh, this
and he
is
goes,
terrible.
Oh, I love, I knew I was going to yell that. I said,
terrible.
He goes, I love awkward questions. And I asked the question, he goes, no, Nat's not pregnant. And then she goes, it's the dress. I'm like, she wasn't supposed to hear me say that.
Why would he repeat that?
Well, he had it on speaker. He had it on speaker, and I didn't know that she was right there. I had no idea. We had been talking for
a
couple of minutes.
You had been talking and couldn't tell you were on speaker?
No, I knew I was on speaker. I just didn't know she was in the room with she hadn't said anything.
You never say that on speaker.
Well, I've learned that now.
Friend, help me out.
You're right, though. So I've told that story to a couple of people. Like, and my sister, I told her that. I'm like, well, I just threw dad under the bus. You know, it's not me that said that. It was my dad who clearly said that. I was trying to get clarification from my father in Chicago, who is, maybe not seeing those pictures as clearly. But honest to God. Okay, so here's the other thing that's funny about this. So I said to Becky, I'm like, I miss a lot of things and I forget things. I said, do you have any indication that Natalie is pregnant? And she looks at me, she's like, what are you talking about now? So then I show her the pictures and she has the same reaction, right? So then I texted Aiden in Chicago. I'm like, Aiden, like, this is weird, but you're because I'm afraid to bring this up at first to my son.
Well, yes.
And I said, Aiden, you don't have any indication because, brothers, they communicate outside of their parents. And he said, no. And then I sent the pictures. He goes, so there was
poor woman.
The visual evidence was misleading. And my dad's response when I sent him the text was, oops.
Okay, I love it. See, the thing about your dad is he doesn't care.
No. And he's going to be, or could be, or is, a great grandfather.
Yes.
Right. Well, he is several times over at this point because my we have some nieces that have babies as well. So I'm trying to think of the number of great-grandchildren. I think there's four.
That is hilarious. But terrible. Okay, we've learned our lesson.
Well, have we?
Never speakerphone. On speakerphone
right.
Do we ask any awkward questions.
But I knew that that was a question that could potentially get me in trouble, but I felt pretty safe at that moment, and I was not. So now I'm sure, you know, Natalie has an issue with me because why?
Well,
you
she cannot, probably doesn't.
You can't, I know, but you can't tell me that that story was not repeated with her family and, you know, shared, hopefully in a joking way. I hope.
Okay, send me that picture because I have to look up close. And the poor woman, I guarantee you, had they were obviously all trying to match.
She's a tiny little
thing.
And
she had something that was of the right color, but she thought, oh, this isn't my bet, but I'm going to wear it anyway. And it turns out it's the dress that makes her
and
look
it's not.
Right.
She is not, like, she.
No.
If you would see her, she's too
she's
skinny.
She's tiny.
Right, okay, there we go. Anyway, I had to confess my... my errors. The errors of my way. Sue's News is coming out.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
For the first time in a week, brought to you by Sue.
How about that?
Yeah. Welcome back.
Thank you. I wanted to... Ethan knows that part of this trip that I took... Michael and I actually went to, we watched the Dave Portnoy pizza videos, the One Bite app, pretty much every night. And one of the top places he has is New Haven, Connecticut, which is the home of Yale. And there are places like Sally's of Beats, we've got Modern, we've got Frank Pepe's, we've got Zupardi's. They've got all these specialty pizza places that Dave has rated really highly. So we waited in line for an hour and a half.
Are you kidding me?
Wow.
And Mike Brackett does not have the tolerance to do that. He kept saying, I'm doing this because of the pizza.
Look, I used to do that back in the day at Geno's East in Chicago.
I've waited more than an hour
to get seated at Geno's East. Now, this was 45 years ago, right?
Well, it's like going back in time.
Yeah.
There's only 15 booths or seats in there, and there's Frank Sinatra signed things on the wall because he used to go there. It was awesome, and they have a tomato pie. Turns out... that is really good, but their crust is exceptional. I like the one they had really thinly sliced potato and rosemary and bacon. Oh, oh, so good.
So did you dine in? Or
yeah,
did
you got to wait
so
to
that's,
dine
that's
in.
Why you're waiting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was totally worth it. Okay. Fred, happy National TV Dinner Day.
Oh.
Remember?
I totally remember.
I remember being a kid, and I had a mom who cooked, but I'd say... can we have a TV dinner? And she'd be like, are you kidding me?
You know, we always would get like a Salisbury steak.
Yes, yes.
And then the mixed vegetables in the little container.
Yes.
And then the mashed potatoes with the bad gravy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We all had those.
You had, my mother was like, what? I can cook something and know what you want. And then you'd eat one and go, okay, maybe you can cook something tomorrow. It's also National Swap Ideas Day. Anything?
So we do every day here.
Yeah. And National School Picture Day. Now, I thought about it, and had I done that in time, I would have had everybody bring their school picture.
Didn't we talk about this last year and we never did it?
I think so, because it always comes up on the day of. I don't look ahead. Maybe if you want to bring in your classic from last year, you could do that tomorrow. And on this day in history, this freaked me out. 37 years ago today, so it's 1989, Deion Sanders made sports history by becoming the only person to ever hit a home run and score a touchdown in the same week.
I remember that.
Amazing.
It was September 6th, 1989. He hit a home run for the Yankees. And then 4 days later, on this day, he ran a punt back 68 yards to score a touchdown for the Atlanta Falcons. His level of, well, Bo Jackson, too. But their level of athleticism is just mind-boggling. And then, 33 years ago today, I was not a huge viewer of this show, but I know people who were. It was The X-Files that premiered on Fox. Did you ever watch those?
Oh, yeah, I was very well loved it.
I was a dedicated fan.
Seriously?
Every episode.
Here's what's funny, though. I've tried to go back and watch some X-Files, and it doesn't hit me the same way. But I loved it back then.
What was it?
I think it was the chemistry between Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny. I thought they were great. And it was like, you know, they were interesting characters. It was mysterious. So, I don't know. It was a good series at the time.
Yeah, it was mysterious because you wanted to know. And, you know, there was that romantic thing between the two of them.
The sexual tension.
Sort of a moonlighting sort of setup, you know, where... You know, the old moonlighting show with Sybil Shepherd and Bruce Willis.
Did they ever put those two together and then it ruined the whole thing? Just wondering.
Romantically?
Yes.
I don't think so.
So
but they were just great together. They're partners, right? Yeah.
Were they just out looking at, like, alien bodies? Because I never watched it.
Well, the show had, it was interesting because there were one-off episodes that would deal with one thing, but then there were intermingling themes, if you will, that would carry.
Man,
the Smoking Man was
like
a character that went from one episode to another.
Wait, what was the Smoking Man?
He was a mysterious character that smoked that would tell, I can't even remember all
like
the
names.
Like
a deep throat character?
Government secrets.
Yeah.
Oh.
Deep throat type of character. Yeah.
All right, and 31 years ago today, I didn't remember this, but in 1995, Cyndi Lauper won an Emmy for a guest appearance on Mad About You. And I looked it up, but I could only find on YouTube like a recording that somebody did of playing it on their TV, so it sounded terrible.
That was like the Paul Reiser, Helen Hunt thing?
Did she play herself or a character?
Oh, no, I couldn't tell because it was just like a... I think she was a character. But I don't actually know because I didn't see the context. I loved that show. I mean, it was aimed right at me. But I do not recall that particular episode. All right, Hallmark. Is it Fred who watches the Hallmark movies?
Dave Klein, producer emeritus.
That's right. Dave Klein, if you're listening, it's the kickoff of the countdown to Christmas with the premiere of Holiday Touchdown, A Bears Love Story. Okay, this is where they've
struck genius. You know, he's a Bears fan.
Did you know that?
Okay, this is like, is he doing the programming or what?
It's on October 17th. It's the third movie made in partnership with the NFL, which is a stroke of genius.
It really is.
Okay, the two other movies were focused on the Kansas City Chiefs and Buffalo Bills, but this one is called A Bears Love Story. And it's about a Chicago firefighter who gets the local news to do a story about his grandmother who will attend their 500th Bears game. And, of course, the love interest is the reporter assigned to the story, Fred. That's how these work.
These are great movies.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. But
Fred, they're not.
They're terrible.
They're simple.
There's a small town girl, and there was a train, and she couldn't get – All right. There will be appearances from Bears coach Ben Johnson – players like Cole Kmet, is that how you say that?
Yeah, it is.
Colston Loveland and former Bears star Mike Singletary will be there.
All right, that's huge.
Charles Peanut Tillman.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And Dan Hampton and Connie Payton, the wife of Walter. Oh. And so that's coming up on October the 17th.
That is kind of cool that they're getting all of them involved. And you're right about that's brilliant on the part of the NFL.
Brilliant. And Hallmark, their full lineup of Christmas movies will be announced next week.
I can't wait.
Okay, I can't either. I have insect news.
You better do it quickly, but we do have it. Here we go.
It's time for insect news.
Oh, yeah, we love this. What do you got for us, Sue?
A doctoral student at the University of California, Riverside, named four species of plant-feeding insects from Australia after Taylor Swift. The genus of the insects is called Swiftiphyllus, and it contains four species: Swiftiphyllus taylorae, Swiftiphyllus amator, Swiftiphyllus intrepidus, and Swiftiphyllus poetorium. The names are Latin versions of Taylor, Lover, Fearless, and Poets. I cannot make it up.
No, you can't.
The student hopes the naming of the bugs after Taylor will help bring attention to the importance of insect conservation. Did you know there was insect conservation?
No.
And she has also named the bugs after Taylor because of their appearance. Quote, Taylor Swift's iconic look is her blonde hair and red lips. These insects are pale yellow with accents of red throughout. I couldn't resist. Fred, you can look them up. They do kind of look. I'm not saying they look like Taylor Swift, but I see what she says about the coloring.
Will they be in any kind of luxury suite on Monday night when the Chiefs play the Broncos?
No word on that yet. And finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. Athletes in the ancient Greek Olympics competed while completely nude. It was a tribute to the Greek god Zeus. They wanted to show Zeus their physical power and muscular physique.
For men, that might have been a little bit more challenging, but maybe not. Interesting random fact. We have our former Attorney General Andrew Bailey with us after 5 o'clock. He's going to be on site tomorrow in Manhattan for the 9/11 ceremonies and wants to reflect on the importance of the 25th anniversary. I mentioned John Ziegler at 5:30. We're going to talk about the Jerry Sandusky case and a lot of other things, too, because I don't know if you remember this, but it was interesting. Last year, this is the anniversary of the Charlie Kirk assassination. And John's daughter, who is just a little older than my daughter, I think she's an eighth grader. Lux is a sixth grader. Grace is her name. She got something from Charlie Kirk, and it was a signed hat. It was a really special moment. And we played the audio of that, and we're going to revisit that in the next hour. Plus, I will have audio cut of the day. Curtis Hauk is back with us right now on the Zoom. You can watch us on the YouTube or the Twitter feed this afternoon. Managing editor of Newsbusters at the Media Research Center. Curtis, how are you on this Thursday?
Good to be with you, my friend, as always.
Are you dialed into our election map controversy here in Missouri, which is chaotic and a complete mess?
It's a complete mess. I mean, I have no idea where to turn. I mean, like by the hour. I mean, just over the last week, I can't imagine what you guys have been going through. I mean, but this is what you do, though. You're supposed to provide clarity for everybody here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, we try to do that. We've been doing it as much as possible. But I'm telling you, this thing has been confusing because it goes back a week ago. I think it was today. The Missouri Supreme Court weighs in unanimously. Then there's a federal judge that weighs in right after that. Then Brett Kavanaugh weighs in, refuses to issue a stay. Then there's this that happens. And then our Secretary of State is called into a contempt hearing today. But as it looks like right now, even though the Eighth Circuit still has to, you know, take this up under a preliminary injunction, it looks like the old maps will be in place for the election in November. Now, that's important because it was the new maps that were being used at the beginning of August. So you got a bunch of people out there, Curtis, who voted in this election that won't even have the opportunity to vote for the candidate that they voted on the first time that might have been the winner.
Right. It's that nuts. That part absolutely gets you that, you know, wait, we had the primary to determine the people that would be in the general election ballot, and now we're completely changing it. It absolutely makes no sense. And of course, you're not really going to get a lot of national attention for that one.
Well, you'll get national attention when you lose, right? Like when it goes back to the old map.
Yeah,
you won't
true.
Get that national attention if you don't. Now, I will candidly tell you that I personally put some of this, and I think a lot of people want to put a lot of this, on our Secretary of State, Denny Hoskins. He was supposed to come on my show yesterday and pulled out at the last minute. He was the one that was, you know, put in front of the Missouri Supreme Court and asked to explain himself this morning. And then they brought him back in the afternoon. And before that session is when he released a statement saying, look, we're going back to the old maps. I'm telling the clerks because our ballots are going out, you know, so this is one of those things that's very timely as well. Curtis Hauk is here from Newsbusters. What do you make of the midterm convention in Dallas? Honestly, as much as I try to stay on top of things because I'm a radio talk show host, this caught me completely off guard on Tuesday. I really didn't know much about it. What I did know about my Wednesday and Thursday night, and this has not been altered, is that I'm watching the NFL. I'm not watching any coverage of the midterm convention, and I think that was kind of a little bit of a mistake. I heard Trump was pissed that he had to compete with the NFL. Maybe someone on his team should have looked at the calendar, right?
Yeah, no. So folks should know that, like, the NFL games were scheduled here first.
Right.
This was not a situation where the RNC comes in and then the NFL is like, how can we screw the president? How NBC? How can we mess with the president so we can get out of having to carry a speech? Now, guys, all of this happened first. The game was Wednesday last night. The Seahawks and the Patriots, because of the Netflix game that's down in Australia, because it's technically Friday over there, they have to have it on Thursday here in the U.S. It just became a whole big mess. And as we know, this convention came together at the last minute. I was watching the convention last night. I did not watch a single second of the football game. Candidly, I wish I had, but, you know, here I am. You know, I think overall, I went in saying, this is stupid, this is pointless, I'm not really sure what this is. But I will say, I think there was more coverage of it in the liberal media, Mark, than I thought. CBS 24/7, the streaming platform there, and MS Now were the only two TV networks to not carry at least a portion of the president's remarks live. That was stunning to me. I was fully expecting CNN to not carry it at all, and it's now to plow ahead like this isn't even happening. But they all totally covered it. NBC News Now, ABC News Live, the free streamers that you can get on YouTube, They had the ABC crew that you see on Good Morning America and the Today Show. They had them working last night covering this thing. So I was surprised, and I'm glad the president's doing it, because you not only have to talk about what you're doing, you also have to talk about what the left is doing, because what I've seen is they're certainly not talking about what is Ms. Chevalier, Abdul El-Sayed, what a lot of these Democrats say that they want to do. They don't really go below the surface mark other than, oh, they want free health care and they don't like Trump.
Yeah. I do think that it was a little surprising to me. You know, I was going back and forth. I got off the air last night, and when I get in the car, I turn SiriusXM on and I listen to Laura and kind of what she's doing. Then I go to Aaron Burnett and see what CNN's doing. And they were both there on site when this thing was, you know, kind of getting started last night. So I was, to your point, a little surprised by that. Now, I don't know how much the messaging gets out. One of the stories today is about the $5,000 checks that he's promising, which I've guaranteed the audience will never happen. It's kind of silly. So no. I don't know how much they want to cover it of the reality of what's going on. But look, let's talk about Tallarico and Ken Paxton, because there's even new polling out today that looks poor for Ken Paxton. I think everyone thinks this is going to be a close race. In the end, the Republican probably wins. But man, Tallarico is not afraid. He's doing interviews with Fox right now. He's not backing down. I don't know if you have a sense of how the rest of the networks are covering that particular race. But obviously, between Michigan and Texas, that's going to be the focus here in the next 2 months.
Well, yeah, I think Ken Paxton is finding out just because you cultivate friendships with conservative influencers doesn't necessarily always translate into voters and immediate fundraising hauls, that you do have to step up. Yes, the president and his super PACs, the NRSC can help you, but you have to raise the money yourself. You have to have the bandwidth. And the talking point out there is that he supposedly over July 4th went over to Ireland with his current young girlfriend. And that just shows a level lack of focus. Now, on the other side with Tallarico, what's interesting is he's starting to get testy here once, you know, Brooke Taylor from Fox News, Leland Vittert from News Nation, a number of networks got about 10 minutes with him in quick succession at this kind of staged food drive thing near the convention. And they brought up past remarks of his, and he simply tried to play it off as either, A, I missed the mark on transgenderism or fill-in-the-blank issue or capitalism, or Ken Paxton and Republicans are just trying to smear me with out-of-context clips. That part I don't think is going to work, because even last night, Garrett Hake on NBC Night News played the capitalism clip. So I'm not maybe they're trying to help him kind of try and explain this away, but he sure doesn't seem like he's doing his part in trying to help them by repeatedly using I missed the mark all the time.
I think he thinks, you know, here's an example, because I think he thinks he can just kind of do this and then the media will move on.
During the 2021 hearing, you said there are six biological sexes. Do you still believe that, standing here with me right now?
No, I've missed the mark on some of my past statements. I will be the first to admit it. What I meant is that there are two sexes, and then there's a small percentage of people with genetic abnormalities.
In 2023, you voted against SB 14. That was the Texas law banning transgender surgeries for minors and puberty blockers. How come you voted against that?
Because the bill was overly broad. And in fact, if you go back and check, I voted for a major amendment to limit the bill to banning surgeries.
All right, so that's just a little flavor of the Brooke Taylor stuff. But really, literally on every position, he flipped and, you know, basically said, and he pivoted to what people are really concerned about are, you know, diesel prices and gas prices. And by the way, you know, he might be right about that in Texas, because the economy certainly is going to play. But, I, you know, again, there's a long way to go. I heard Elon Musk is pouring a lot of money into that race in Texas, too.
Yeah, because I think the one, maybe about transgenderism, but I think him talking about wanting to dismantle capitalism and basically wanting to make the oil and gas industry kind of this archaic.
That won't fly in Texas.
No, it's not. Exactly. That kind of thing isn't going to fly. You really can't just say, well, I was wrong there. People understand that, like, you pivot to the general election, and then once you're elected, you may go back to where you were during the primary there. So that's definitely going to be a concern. Elon Musk, as you noted, is stepping up to the plate with his America PAC. We will see what happens. Hopefully we get some debates with these guys. But they're learning here that Tallarico may have learned some of the mistakes of Beto O'Rourke back then, you know, because Eric Erickson has pointed out that even though it was very close, Beto almost won, at no point in polling was Ted Cruz losing.
Right. I know. And that's what kind of concerns me on this one, because the opposite is sort of true. Curtis Houck is here from Newsbusters. You know, a few weeks ago when Dolly Parton died, they did this great tribute. They flipped it around very quickly on whatever day that was on CBS. It was a Wednesday or Thursday, and they had a tribute to her for an hour long. And the last part of the tribute was a 60-minute story that Morley Safer had done about Dolly Parton 17, 18 years. It was awesome. And what it also did, Curtis, is it sort of reminded me when 60 Minutes was must-see TV, you know, back then with Morley Safer and Mike Wallace and the cast that we all got to know. Now, this is the opening weekend of the new season of 60 Minutes, the first one since Barry Weiss took over CBS News. You have people that have left the show, like Sharon Alfonsi, Scott Pelley, and Cecilia Vega. You got some new names in here as producers. You have a couple of people who stuck with the show, Leslie Stahl being one of them. Do you expect different editorial content on this season of 60 Minutes?
Well, we shall see. I mean, we studied the last six seasons of 60 Minutes. Nicholas Spinato and our summer intern, Spinato is now full-time with us. We found of the political story, 78 or 76 were framed from the left and 16 were from the right. So about a 5-to-1 ratio there. I will say we do know of two of the stories. Usually there's three or four stories every episode. We know the one is a John Wertheim embed profile with the Los Angeles Rams. So that's usually at the end of the show because it's a more softer story.
Right, right.
And Norah O'Donnell's interview with one of the airmen shot down over Iraq. That is going to be must-see television. That is the kind of thing, as you point out there with the Dolly Parton piece, that 60 Minutes needs to be doing more of. Yes, it looks like there's interviews with Trump military officials, including Secretary Hegseth, that may be testy. But on the whole, the point is hearing this man's ordeal and what he went through and the heroism of our military. This
Can't
is
wait
kind
to
of
hear that. Yeah.
Good journalism,
right.
Must-see TV that I think 60 Minutes needs to do more of. And for Oliver Darcy and co. to claim, oh, it's going to have record low ratings, I think because this is their first get out of the shoot, I think a ton of people are going to be tuning in, especially after the doubleheader game on CBS. There's some rumblings. I kind of maybe have an idea of what the second story is, but I don't want to say for sure. But, you know, that this military story is going to be the lead. That's going to be everywhere. They're going to show his face. They got approval to do that.
That's
so that
interesting.
Massive.
Yeah.
And all of the teases, they've kept that part hidden. Because, you know, just like with book releases sometimes, Mark, they let all the good excerpts out. So
yeah.
By the time
you
buy the book, it's not as fun.
Look, I'd like to have some hope for 60 Minutes. And by the way, you know, as biased as they have been over the last, certainly the last decade, it's not like there was not some worthy reporting during 60 Minutes over the past few years. You know, when they get into, and you know this because you guys look at this at Newsbusters all the time, but when they get into some of the more feature stories or something that is, you know, more along the lines of human interest, I think it was even Scott Pelley that went to these amazing caves in Vietnam.
Yes.
And that was a great story. It had nothing to do with politics. It was eye-opening. It was dazzling visually. I didn't hear any stupid political bias. Those are the types of things where 60 Minutes can bring you into a different world. And, you know, I think this soldier is a perfect example. It's unique. You're not hearing it anywhere else. They have, you know, obviously they get this guy before anyone else. So I think that's cool. So I have hopes for 60 Minutes with Barry Weiss at the helm, and I just hope for a little bit more fairness. We're not acting as if no one wants them to turn into some conservative outlet or do we expect that, right? We just want a little bit of fairness, and we're victims here in St. Louis because Bill Whitaker, who remained on the team in the aftermath of the changes, is one of the guys that came here and lied about our, you know, circuit attorney and called us all racist because we wanted to get rid of Kim Gardner. We've been vindicated on that, but that's the kind of reporting that's got to stop. You know, the type of reporting where the 60 Minutes anchor, reporter, producer, if they go in knowing what the story is going to be as opposed to investigating a story and reporting on what they find, that's where journalism needs to head. It's been kind of going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think of the California bullet train story that John Wertheim did last season, towards the end there, that kind of said through like over two decades of and billions of dollars spent, not a single layer of track has been laid. And now it's going to be just Bakersfield to Fresno or something like that, if it even happens. So it's possible to do engaging enterprise journalism that appeals to a broad audience. It doesn't have to be all January 6th. It doesn't have to be all defund the police or gotcha stories about this Republican governor or Moms for Liberty. It is possible to have potent, valuable, influential journalism because, you know, I do think, yes, people make fun of 60 Minutes, but when a story is done about you on 60 Minutes, it does stick with a lot of people, especially ones that air during football season, like what happened with you guys out in St. Louis. That sticks with people that say, oh, I saw a thing on 60 Minutes about you guys.
Yeah, no, I'm with you for sure. Curtis, thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. We'll see what holds, you know, what 60 Minutes holds for us here on Sunday. You have a great weekend. Enjoy football in 60 Minutes. We'll talk next week. Hey, I've got another pair of tickets to give away to go see Brian Kilmeade at the Factory on November 21st. It's a Saturday night right before Thanksgiving. It's going to be awesome. He's got a new book coming out. The 97.1 FM Talk team will be a part of that. So how about caller number 7 right now on the contest line, 314-241-9797. Ethan will take your call, and we'll have one more pair to give away tomorrow on the show. Brian was on yesterday. Sue, you missed him because you were out. We've been, you know, I don't know why this is, and I can say that today has been the same as the other days this week. For whatever reason, I'm spending a lot more time, and I am more affected by the 9/11 videos than I ever have probably in my life since 9/11. I don't know why it is. I don't know if it's because it's the 25th or if things are just hitting me in a weird way, but I cannot get away from watching some of the videos and listening to some of the audio out there. And it's just, you know, horrifying. And, you know, there are a lot of people, my kids included, who really, you know, don't remember this because Aiden was a year and a half. Evan was about, you know, 4 years old. I was literally in my home in Bayside, Wisconsin, just north of Milwaukee. I was watching Blue's Clues. I had not taken the kids to daycare. Now, I was doing a nighttime talk show at the time from 8 until midnight. And my sister called me. I love this, too. It's on the landline, right? I remember. It's so funny. You can remember things. Like, I remember picking up the landline. And I was a huge Today Show fan even back then. And she said, are you watching the Today Show? I said, no. She goes, turn it on. And about 5 minutes after I turned it on, the second plane came in. And then, you know, I rush the kids off to daycare. I go into the station and they send me home because they're like, we're going to need you for tonight. So it was a frustrating day for me only because I was dying to get on the air and to talk about it and to do the coverage. But I had to sit home. And I mean, I was glued. We were all glued. We couldn't believe what we were seeing. And there were so many different aspects of it. I mean, there was the confusion when the first plane goes in. We don't know if it was a terrorist attack. People are reporting on it. You know, how did this happen? And then as they're discussing it, you know, 5 minutes later, however long it was, 20, I think 20, 25 minutes later, the second plane comes in to the other tower, a lot lower, by the way. Then as bad as that was, and then you have, and I've been listening to a lot of these terrible phone calls with people who were, you know, faced with, they know that they were going to die. I don't know. The whole thing, I want to talk about it a little bit more. We're going to share some memories in the next hour, also tomorrow as well. But it is affecting me a lot more than it has in the past. And I'm not sure why, but it is something we should absolutely take, you know, a moment to think about, certainly. And we're going to do that with Andrew Bailey, the assistant director of the FBI. Yeah. He'll be there in Manhattan for the 9/11 ceremonies. He's coming up after 5 o'clock.
Get more at 971talk.com.